Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life after booze.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I've been sober for 1 year, 2 months, and 7 days.
Hey, I'm Kaylee, and I have been alcohol-free for 1 year, 5 months, and 5 days. 155.
Ooh, that's good. I like that number. We're not doing that anymore. I'm not supposed to say that anymore.
if it's authentically the way that you feel,
I that's think it's not. You, you know? Kaylee, how are you tonight?
Oh my God. I was just telling Katie I worked today. I went and got a flu shot randomly. And then I went to the gym and came home. And I left my makeup on when I went to the gym, which was a mistake because I was wearing fucking eyeliner and it sweat into my eyes and my eyes are like burning and I literally look like the poster of Rob Pattinson, like of Batman when he has
like, I want a full review of Batman tonight.
Oh my God.
Way. Okay. Not right now.
I will.
We'll get to it.
So yeah, this is probably going to sound like the most Portland hipster thing I've said on the podcast yet, but I'm drinking barley milk out of a mason jar and
oh my God, I love you.
I need to like eat dinner and shower, but I am great. I am gross, but I am so fucking happy to be here. How are you, Katie?
That's amazing to hear. I had kind of the same day. I was like, I woke up this morning and it was like 5:55 and I was supposed to be at workout class at 6:05
and oh, shit.
I fucking late canceled it. And I was like, no, like I'm not going to go. I was so tired. And our friend at The Magic Is in the Middle actually released an episode for her new podcast. And it talked about this, like defining that voice. That's like, you're not going because you're not trying, or no, I'm not going because I'm listening to my body. And it was definitely one of those voices. And
good.
So that felt good. And I'm on day 6 of my morning meditation, which feels really good. They haven't been quality. They've been like the 3-minute ones from Insight Timer, but it is like making all the difference.
Every little bit counts, though. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I'm literally just saying that to tell myself that because I haven't started meditation because I feel like I, like, quote unquote, don't know how.
Oh, yeah.
But I just shut my fucking eyes. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's crazy. When I first started meditating and I thought the same thing, right? I was like, no, I don't know how to do that. Like, I'm too much for that or whatever. I can't sit.
I can't sit still.
I can't. Yeah, you know me. I was like in like total denial. And then I did it. And the meditation I was listening to dropped you in to the meditative state. And then it was like, at this point, you're probably thinking thoughts from your day, like acknowledge them and then like swipe them across your eyes, like out of your brain and out of your way. And then just come back to this present moment. And we're not mad about it. And it's okay. Like, you're here. And I was like, oh, I can do this, you know, like it's always just combating those floating thoughts that come back and forth just to stay in the present moment. So, yeah, it's like I don't know. I don't feel like I ever fail at it, which feels really nice. I don't think anyone can fail at it.
No, that's why they call both with like meditation. And I know with yoga as well, it's called a practice.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
Like you are constantly, it's going to be like a journey. Yeah, forever.
Yeah, it is crazy. Speaking of that, actually, this applies. I apologize, first of all, for that tangent. Back to me and how I'm doing. So I had my first acupuncture appointment, and I learned that in Chinese medicine, that's also a forever thing that you just do indefinitely. She said some people in China are having acupuncture done twice a day, full time. Forever. It's like a self-care practice. I'm like, that is dope. Love that.
I love that. And not to immediately jump into how America and capitalism and our health system and like how everything fucking sucks. But it's just interesting because I'm guilty of always wanting that quick fix, of always wanting that to like pop a pill and have everything be better, or to
do that's just been like subconsciously programmed for onto all of us for, you know, decades and decades.
Yeah, but actually having these practices like meditation, acupuncture, and yoga, like, they're doing something right. They mm-hmm. seem like the happiest fucking most zened out people I've ever met, at right. least. So,
and like the most spiritual, right? Like just ones mm-hmm. that like have connection with their ancestry and with their culture and things like that too, which I think is really special. It like keeps you connected when you pass that on for generations, and it's like self-given medicine.
So cool.
So anyways, I was bougie. I got my acupuncture done. I had a massage today to help with my headaches, and but I was just kind of go and so here we are. It's 9 o'clock on Tuesday night.
9 o'clock on a Tuesday night. We're just rolling into it. And what are we talking about this week, Katie? What are we doing? What's happening?
Okay, so Kaylee and I were talking about our early sobriety, and I asked her if she'd experienced like the pink cloud syndrome or the pink cloud. And she was like, what the fuck is that? Let me Google it. And we just started to kind of go deep and thought that other people might want to know about it, or how we made the pink cloud more sustainable and found tools that help us continue that momentum into sobriety.
Yeah, so pink cloud, if you're like me and haven't heard of what the fuck that is, it's basically like the honeymoon stage of sobriety, right? So like you feel really good because you're right on the other side of that withdrawal. So you're getting more sleep, you're waking up without a hangover, like you're Gucci. But then just like a honeymoon phase in like a relationship, you start getting into like real world shit, and your emotions are no longer at that all-time high. They're kind of balanced out. And it's a time, at least, Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, but a time that's really vulnerable for folks in their sobriety, because when that high goes away, that like natural high goes away, then you're more likely to relapse. So,
right. Yeah. You're like left at this point where you just rode out this high on the other side of withdrawal, like you said. And then all of a sudden you're white knuckling all of these emotions and all of these feelings and all of this newness that you're experiencing. And oftentimes, because it felt so good some people experience the pink cloud for a week, some people experience it for months. And because you're riding that high, with the high, there always comes a low, is kind of how they explain it. And when you're in the high, you're not doing the work because things feel good. Like, why would I do the work, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're, you know, start to come down, it's just like, there's just not, you don't always have the tools to look to. And so I think that that's a really interesting aspect of sober curiosity and sobriety that isn't talked about as much.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's so easy for me to forget my accomplishments always, but mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. how long of a road it's been. And the fact that I feel like I've had multiple kind of pink cloud phases. And even in
me too.
Yeah. And even like in this stint of sobriety, I felt like I was a year in and was having these feelings and was like, wait, like I thought I was done with this.
Yeah.
So, Katie, like what pink cloud did you experience in early sobriety, and how did that feel for you, and how did that like show up for you when you were just a few months in to not drinking anymore?
Okay, so about a month in, I was ready to scream from the rooftops that I was sober. And I was like, fuck yeah, you know, like this is the best. And I was like, you know, up to my eyeballs in Quit Lit. That's when I started reading Quit Like a Woman, and like listening to The Sober Lush on audiobook, and just like, you know, kind of diving into things that were sobriety. And I also started to like side hustle. I found this new energy. So I started a new like social media management, just a small business, just for some extra money and to see if maybe my career plan or career switch was in the cards for me. And so I just like went hard on all of this extra stuff. And I spent like 2 months like that. I had no plan, I had no tools, and I had no idea what was coming next for me, and I didn't care. And I was just kind of saying yes to everything and really writing it out. I cleaned my house so much. I had like this crazy project, and I was listening to so much true crime podcasts and
living your best life, it sounds like, and just on one, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, dude. I even said yes to going to Vegas sober for the first time.
Dude, I fucking forgot about that.
Yeah, so I flew into Vegas. I'd never been there. And there were people taking shots on the plane when alcohol wasn't allowed. They were like sitting all around me. They were a bunch of kids who weren't 21. They were taking fireball shots. And I'm 3.5 months sober and booking like, oh my God, no one would know.
Yeah.
Like oh my God. And she offered me one. She was actually my barista at the Dutch Brothers that's down the road from here. I was like, I recognize you. She was like, oh yeah, I work at the Dutch Brothers by your house. I see you on Saturdays after my workout, I'll go there.
That's so random.
Yeah. And you know, it's like a hopper flight from Eugene to Vegas. So it's small, but we get there and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what did I sign up for?
So you didn't take the shot?
No. No. Yeah. And I just kept thinking about this one time that I was taking shots of Jameson and drinking Guinness in the airport. It was actually at a layover in Vegas before I went to Denver. No, it was a layover in Denver before I flew to Michigan. And I barfed up a po' boy that I got in the airport. Yeah. It was disgusting. And when my mom picked me up, she's like, you smell like puke. I was like, yeah, I do. I just spent all day in an airport and I fucking vomited on the flight because I got drunk and ate my sandwich too fast.
Oh.
Yeah, so anyways, I came back from that trip and I was like, I should probably figure something out because things are starting to get harder. I remember I was like driving home from work one day and I called my sister. I FaceTimed my sister and she answered and she lives down in Laguna. And I was just like, hi. And she was like, hey, what's up? And I was like, oh, I've just had a really hard day. And I like started to well up like crying. And then she panned the phone around and my dad was there visiting her from Oregon. And my stepmom was there and they were having a get together with our friends from or our family from Southern California. And they were like, say hi to Katie. And I'm just like in tears, like sobbing.
Worst.
Because I was like, it was the first time I've really had that I had really ever had that feeling like I'm gonna drink. And I went to Sweet Life instead. But when I was on my way to Sweet Life, I got a call from my dad. And he said to me, hey, I noticed you looked upset on the phone with Dana, and he said, I just thought I would call you in case you needed like some accountability right now. Like, I know it's not always easy when family's away and you're, you know, new to the sober gang, because he's been sober. He just had his 11th year sober in February.
That's awesome that he recognized that and was able to do that.
Yeah. And he did. He left like the family get together and went outside and called me and like went on a walk and talked to me. And yeah, it was a really good experience. And he said, you should probably, he's the first person who said, you should probably put a list of people together that you can text or call if you are feeling like you want to have a drink. And I immediately took the advice and I asked you, Kaylee, I called you and I said, right, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that meant a lot. So that was kind of like where my pink cloud ended. And I was like, I'm doing this shit. This is crazy. And then I actually got in contact with Reframe app and just kind of fell into the sober Instagram space about 4.5 months in. And that was really helpful for me. But yeah, so that was my spiel. What about you, Kay?
This definitely reminds me of a time where it was before my stint, my current stint of 1 year, 5 months and 5 days, but it was when I was around like 200 days sober. I think it was either like my first or second time doing this. So yeah. I felt like I was riding the high, like I was good to go. And I got invited to my sister's wedding. Weird situation. I think I may have mentioned a little bit of this before, but my sister isn't my real sister. She is, which sounds so fucking harsh to say, she's not fucking my real sister. But my dad married my ex-stepmom. Both my parents are divorced and were both remarried and then divorced again. So it gets really confusing. And my parents' parents are both divorced on both sides. So there's a lot of divorce and remarriage. And I have like 8 sets of grandparents. It's, and it gets kind of crazy, but so my sister is my dad's second wife's daughter. So she's not like my half sister. She is strictly like not related to me at all, but she lived with us for a really long time. We've stayed close. Her dad was not really in the picture and lost custody completely, so my dad really kind of took that role for her, and she was getting married. And when my parents divorced, or when my dad and my stepmom divorced, she moved down to California, to Sacramento. That's where my sister has grown up. That's where my half brother has, you know, lived primarily. So they're very separate. But when certain things like that happen, it's like, I feel like I should totally be there.
Right. But, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But that side of the family are definitely more heavy drinkers. I've told some stories about the story with the Jell-O shots at Christmas. That was yes. This is where I threw up on Thanksgiving. Like I'm always puking at this place because I just cannot fucking keep up. Like it is insane how much these folks can drink just day in and day out. And they are wonderful people. And I'm like not saying anything bad about them at all, but it is very much their lifestyle. Like my, I guess my ex-stepmom's house is like all like wine signs and saves all the corks and puts them in this thing. Like it is just very much, the wine mom culture. And so I went to that wedding and my dad ended up getting too drunk and he like Irish goodbye'd at my sister's wedding at the after party, because their wedding was like 2 minutes and then they immediately went to this like an Eagles Lodge, like an Elks Lodge thing was rented out. It smelled like people had been smoking in there for 40 years, you know, and yeah, my dad ended up getting too drunk and was like leaving my sister's wedding early, essentially, and tried to Irish goodbye. And I like caught him like leaving outside and was just, and I could just tell, like, it was just, he was so fucked up. And he was getting in an Uber and I was like, are you okay? Like, I just had not seen him that wasted in a really long time in person. And I remember bawling. And called Danny and was like, dude, like this thing that just happened. And he was really great. So he was someone that was on my list. And but I went inside and I was upset. And my ex-stepmom and some of her friends from the wedding were like, what's wrong? Like, what's going on? Are you okay? Which was very sweet. It was like me crying in a bathroom sober and all the drunk girls trying to to comfort me. But they were all, bless you know. Them. Yeah. And I was like, my dad just left and he's fucking wasted. Like, he's leaving my sister's special day early. Like, I don't think he's going to remember any of this. And like, he does this all the time. He binge drinks exactly like I do, where like once you pop you can't stop. And he gets made fun of actually a lot by that group and that that side of the family, because he just cannot hold his liquor as well as they can. So anyway, I was talking to them about it. They were consoling me in the bathroom and they were just so dismissive. They were like, it's okay. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, he didn't try and drive.
Well, because that's not something that they value.
Oh, yeah. And they were like, he didn't try and drive, right? And I was like, no, he got an Uber. And they were like, we literally don't see the problem. And I'm like, he does this all the time and he's too fucking old to be doing this shit. And I'm talking to people who are like the same age as him and who are currently wasted. And he's gotten two DUIs and they were like, oh my God, who hasn't? And I'm like, this is not normal. This is not normal. And no one understands what I'm going through right now. And I was alone and I was in another city and state, and thankfully got to talk to Danny for a little bit on the phone, but was then essentially at this place by myself with only like really weirdly connected, distant relatives-ish of my ex-stepmom. So,
Right.
Yeah, that was a really hard, that was like, oh, reality is hitting, the rose-colored glasses are off. Like, this is fucking hard.
How far were you into sobriety?
I think I was like 60 days in, like just a couple months.
Damn, that's a lot.
Yeah, and I remember just being like, no one would know and no one would even bat an eye if I just started taking this free alcohol. They had like a margarita machine, like a giant, like almost like a 7-Eleven thing that was like pumping out like frozen margaritas, and no one would have cared or known, or it, like Danny wouldn't have known. None of my friends at home would have known. I could have just like totally carried on, and I stayed sober. But then at the next wedding that was down in California with those same people, I did end up drinking and like breaking my streak. So anyway, that's
So what did you do during your like pink cloud phase on that stint? Do you remember? Or on this most recent one? Like, what was the pink cloud like for you?
This most recent one, I feel like I said, I've had like multiple pink clouds. But really similar stuff to you, Katie, like just feeling fucking on one, like singing in the car by myself, like this fucking childlike wonder, this joy. I, you know, started getting into climbing a lot more, started this new gym, got a new job, like said yes to a ton of shit that I wanted to do, made a ton of new friends.
Yes.
Really, you know, poured a lot of energy into Dry Hard Pod and we got that started. So lots of really, really good stuff happening. And just the amount of energy that I had is something that I always have struggled with. And I do feel like currently that's something I'm really needing to figure out more. But quitting drinking and then those few months after, I feel like really just jump-started my energy, and I was waking up on weekends early and just like getting shit done. So
yeah, I love that. I try to think of things like that in like seasons, you know, when it comes and like then it goes away for a little bit and then you kind of just put your head down and get back to like self-care and saying no. And you know, like it's nice to be able to sustain that throughout sobriety, so you get it to come in waves.
Yeah, Danny and I both are very encouraging of each other whenever we feel that way. So he'll like come downstairs and be like, sweet, it looks like you're on one. Like, I will stay out of your way. I will let you do your thing. Like, how can I support you? Like, when you have that energy, take full advantage of it because it's not always going to be there.
Yeah, so. No, I love that. That's such a great way to support each other.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty great. So
let's take a break to give a shout out to our partners.
Sounds good. Let's do it. If you know me, you know I'm always drinking 5 NA beverages at one freaking time. So I love having different concoctions to switch things up. That's why Dry Hard Pod partnered with High Street Tonics, a woman-owned, locally crafted range of organic herbal bitters and honey cider vinegar tonics. The restorative tonics support digestion and well-being through their herbal properties, and they make the most amazing mocktails. Use the link in our bio to shop their website and use code DRYHARDPOD for 10% off when you purchase.
As you all know, I'm obsessed with Reframe app. It's the number one alcohol reduction app. It's built to help you drink less. Whether your goal is to cut back or quit entirely, Reframe is life-changing. Daily Zoom support groups, a community forum, and challenges, podcasts, TED Talks, you name it, over 100 resources are accessible in this app at any given time. You can download Reframe app on iOS, use the 7-day free trial, and use code KATY, Katie, for 10% off your subscription. I always come up with these like good, these nuggets when I'm getting to retell these stories. Cause I'm like, oh, that's a new perspective I didn't have before last time that I thought about this. So.
Well, and dude, I just forget so much. I forget so much of anything before COVID.
yeah, dude, that's real.
So it's nice to recognize like how long the road has been and like how much I've learned and actually like picked up and stuck with along the way. So so those we just both shared essentially like two traumatic trigger moments that we both had. So we both had moments where we were in really kind of shady situations that we probably shouldn't have put ourselves in that early in sobriety. And then you, Katie, mentioned that you ended up getting a phone call from your dad and not essentially like relapsing at that time.
Yeah.
Like you pushed through.
I guess like I've never thought of it that way, but yeah.
Yeah. So, and I didn't end up relapsing at that specific time, but I did end up kind of having a similar situation break me down eventually after that. So now that we are both over a year into this process, and you were mentioning that you had multiple pink clouds too, like what has helped you stay like push through those moments where you no longer have that like honeymoon phase of sobriety?
Well, just being armed with the information now, finding a more sustainable joy in sobriety will always be a juggling act.
Yeah.
So like arming myself with that information, right? And just knowing that, because when you're in early sobriety, especially, you don't have that information in front of you, do you? No one's telling you that. I mean, hopefully now, woo, like so many people are like 1,000 hours dry, has done amazing pink cloud posts, like Reframe, they all are all over this stuff. It's like science. It's about getting to know your emotions again. So
yeah,
me just knowing now that it's just a moment that I'm going through.
Yes, it's the quote or mantra or whatever you want to call it, like this feeling is not forever, like this is not forever.
And like that one day at a time shit, like that's legit, you know?
Well, and being able to actually believe that, I don't think ever happened for me before sobriety. Like that's a tool that I've learned in sobriety, because when I am drunk and sobbing, you know, in the bathroom, everything feels like the worst thing in the world, and that I'm going to be feeling that horrible feeling forever because things are just like so fucked up. But they're really,
for sure.
They're really not. And I'm also recognizing that I tend to focus on, I find negative things to ruminate on too. So
Dude, I definitely, in sobriety, learned about myself that I live in the future a lot. So I'm oftentimes like planning things out in my head or like different scenarios. And like, they're always the worst case scenarios. I'm like laying in bed, running all these scenarios through my head. And like, now I'm like able to identify that like, hey, Katie, you are living in the future right now. Like your body can't tell the difference between what you're telling it could happen and what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Stop, come back, because your body deserves to be relaxed. Like your nervous system is insane right now. Like, you know, talking myself down from an anxiety panic attack is just, but I have to, like it's, but having that tool is amazing. And that helps me now as well.
Do you feel like meditation has also kind of helped bring you back to the moment? Because mindfulness is something I really struggle with, and I'm hoping that meditation will help with that, because I'm the same. And I think it is like a survival mechanism or some sort of like childhood, you know, trauma response.
Meditation definitely helps. I think that anything that takes care of the, I think it's called the vagus nerve, is that what it's called? Anything that keeps your nervous system healthy just in general is great. So going on walks, being alone, not checking out, like getting 8 hours of sleep, eating the color of the rainbow, like anything that where you're stopping and thinking about it. So meditation 100%. And then even weird things like I make my bed every morning, and that has become a huge part of that relaxation ritual in the morning. Like I've said, it's not like a, huge bed makeover. I literally flop some shit down. Like, I don't tuck in my sheets. Like, no. Nothing. Yeah, I might fluff one of my pillows if I'm feeling very bougie that day. But, like, otherwise it's not happening. And so, yeah, there's that. And then washing my face at night, too. Like, you know, it's just interesting, those, like, those pieces of self-care that really help you in those times that things feel hard.
Yes. And it's just
so hard.
It's funny because both of us struggle with perfectionism too, but you are not making your bed quote unquote perfect, but it's still really improving your mornings and just feeling organized. And so
and doing something that I promised myself I would do.
Yeah, that always feels good. That always feels like, fucking choice.
Yeah, dude, I always feel like I am the fucking pillar of health, you know? And then I have days where I like, oh, did you know that KFC has the Beyond Meat chicken now? I got some shit from KFC last week. Anyways, that was my example of how I also eat KFC and get sad. I was sad yesterday for the first time in a while, you know, but
yeah.
Turning back to that shit. Oh, and then this is another thing, Kaylee. Knowing that I do not want to be hungover gets me through those like phases of relapse too. Like I so strongly do not want to suffer from anxiety that it keeps me fucking grounded. And I always tell people to put that, to try to be in that mindset.
Once you experience the feeling of not constantly feeling like shit, I honestly feel like if I was hungover, I would pass away. Like I would no longer be of this earth.
I totally agree with you. And I want to share this quote, actually, that The Magic is in the Middle said in her new podcast episode. If you're into like spirituality and sobriety, you guys go listen to Saturn and Surrender. Our friend at The Magic is in the Middle just put out this fucking 14-minute little episodes, like so juicy, so good to listen to. But she said, I was doing things to avoid suffering versus doing things to amplify joy. And I was like, what? Yeah, that's sobriety.
Damn.
You know? Yes. Like, that's what we should be working for. Sorry, that was very long and drawn out. I hope it was worth it for everyone listening.
Yeah, damn. Repeat it one more time, Katie, just so we can, like, mic drop.
I was doing things to avoid suffering versus doing things to amplify joy.
Yes. I don't even think I knew what joy felt like as an emotion for a really long time.
Yeah, it's going to be a no for me too.
It was just damage control all the fucking time, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
so on the topic of hangovers.
Ugh.
1000 Hours Dry Babes page, which is like my favorite. Love the Dry Babes. They just posted content on Instagram, and I just learned this fact, and it blew my mind. The average person spends 2 years of their life hungover. The average person. That means if you spend 1 day a month for your life hungover. 1 day a month.
That sounds so fucking miserable to be hungover for 2 years. Fuck God. That.
And think about it. I was probably, honestly, if I'm being honest with myself, hungover 3 or 4 nights a week.
Yeah.
That's every like weekend. 10 years, dude. That's a long time.
In college, it was literally like every weekend I would wake up and get McDonald's breakfast and go back to sleep and then wake up at like 11 or 12 and fucking heat that shit in the microwave because the 24-hour breakfast wasn't a thing and hate myself for the rest of the fucking day. Like,
yeah, I used to, anyone from Eugene or Springfield, I used to be so fucking hungover and go to Dos Banderas.
Yes.
That cart next to Lucky's. But it was right like 3 blocks from my house on Madison.
But they were closed on Sundays and it really fucking pissed me off because that was always when I was the most hungover.
Oh, yeah. I was a weekday Dos Banderas girl.
Ooh, lucky.
Delish. I know. Anyways, I would eat the entire chorizo burrito and then I would go to sleep. Yeah. That's my story.
Yes, a breakfast burrito and sleep was like, it still fucking blows my mind that I get so much shit done on the weekends. Oh,
insane.
It's amazing. And then I am not so stressed throughout the week. Like, chef's kiss. It is beautiful. Yes. So, okay. I got us on a tangent.
No, I love that. That was a great talk.
Okay. We are talking about what feels good, what keeps us from wanting to experience being fucking hungover. That is, so you were saying, Katie, that that's a really good deterrent for you, like to help keep you sober, is just remembering how horrible that was.
Yeah, I'm just not willing to do that anymore.
I definitely feel like I do not want to do this, but it would be interesting and maybe helpful because I do forget so much shit and tend to discredit a lot of things that happen to me, slash just like black them out, but to do a collage of like drunk photos of myself or like old diary entries of like, I'm so fucking hungover. Like, I should have did a video recording like of me the last time I got drunk and was like, to your future self, you know?
Yeah. Like, hey, bitch, this is why on Reframe app, we actually, you can write letters to yourself.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Like when you hit a certain sobriety date, you get to, the app lets you open it.
Yeah. If you were just starting, record yourself before you get sober, record yourself like 3 months sober when you're in your pink cloud stage.
Your plink cloud.
Yeah, record yourself when you're in your pink cloud stage and then go back to those when you feel like that pink cloud is fading, because I think that it would be really cool to see. I wish I did that. So do it for me because I fucked up.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, journaling during the pink cloud phase, just documenting how awesome that you feel. But then I feel like you're not only just documenting how you feel and how good you feel, but you're also reprogramming your subconscious by putting that those thoughts out there on paper and in your head. So I also feel like it's working on the like neuropathway level, if you will. And I think that that's cool. I think that that's like a way to extend those feel-good endorphins and hormones for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm going to let Kaylee talk about boundaries because I think that they're so important in early sobriety and then to be sustainable in sobriety. However, Therapy Jeff on TikTok or Instagram, whichever one you use, will tell us how fucking old you are, but the video is about what self-care can look like, and I loved the video. So he essentially was like, it looks like not texting someone back, it looks like taking a bath, it could look like going on a run, it could look like venting to a friend, it could look like avoiding something that stresses you out. Like, it's all valid, and there's so many different ways to take care of yourself in early sobriety. And then the thing is, it's so cool, is when you've learned how to soothe yourself with those, then you keep using them over time to come back to that space when you hit a low. And that has been so cool to hear Kaylee tell me about, as she was further in sobriety than I am. And then for me to be experiencing now, it feels really good to be like, oh, I've got a fucking tool for it. Like, it's my sober toolkit. Like, oh, I can post on the forum on Reframe. I can call Kaylee and we could be like, hey, we need to record an episode. I can even make a post on Instagram to really express myself. Like, there's just so many tools and spaces.
Yeah. And I would say once you have those tools, you are in the pink cloud more often. Like, I really don't have a lot of huge, long lows. And that's, you know, saying something for someone with persistent depressive disorder, which means that I'm, you know, usually depressed all the time. So
I should not laugh, but it's fucking true. So
no,
here we are.
No, you can. It's facts.
Yeah. But I feel like for me, things start to get pent up when I start to say yes to more and compromise my time. Mm-hmm. That I've dedicated to myself, I find that I wind up being in like a super high place and then a super low crash. So I'm trying to figure out how to sprinkle those things a little bit more frugally.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of people that can relate to that though, Katie, like taking on a shit ton and then getting burnt out, you know?
Yeah. What about you? What are your sustainable tools that you've taken from your pink cloud stage and applied it as you are now over a year sober?
I've really been doing a lot of what I want. I feel like
so cool. Like, giving yourself permission is huge.
Yes. Like, I have been spending money on things that I want to spend money on. I am saying yes to things that I want to say yes to, like going to the beach with some of my friends, or I went to drag brunch recently and fucking made it rain on these queens because they were doing knee slides across the, you know, the restaurant, and it was amazing. And so I don't know, I feel like so many of those opportunities have been coming to me, probably because I'm hopefully putting that energy out there. But I've also been saying no to a ton of shit where old me, and I still struggle with being like, I'm being so selfish, I'm being so bitchy, like these people aren't going to like me, or they're not going to invite me to stuff anymore if I say no. Mm-hmm. But I've really just been kind of like letting it all out there and being like, hey, I'm doing a lot with the podcast and this new side hustle I picked up and my full-time job and trying to exercise because I know that that helps with my anxiety. So I might not be able to do a regular improv practice right now. Or I got invited to a house party and I just cannot.
By who?
By someone in my improv community.
We like them.
Yeah.
I was gonna say why.
No, but it's awesome because it was so understandable that I wouldn't come, but I was really worried about it. And they were like, we really don't expect you to go to shit like that. Like, you're sober. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm fucking old. Like, y'all are, you know, in your mid 20s and I'm 31 and like, I have to go to fucking bed. And
yeah. Or like, I will have IBS. You know what I mean? It's like, there are consequences.
Yeah, there are severe, dire consequences. But it was nice to just even feel comfortable. And this may seem to other people who are way better at stating their needs and way more confident and way more able to advocate for themselves something so silly. But I can't express enough how much I would never have fucking done this like 2 years ago. What I would have done is said that I would make it, stress out about going the entire week, ruin my entire week, and then finally feel so overwhelmed to the point of tears that I would cancel last minute with like some vague excuse. And it's just not a good way to treat your friends, and it's not good for me. It's not good for my mental health. So I've been I was just like, hey, 3 days in advance, or, you know, a good amount of time in advance, I said, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it, but I love you and I hope you have an amazing birthday, an amazing party. And like, I would really love to get together and do something else soon.
Yeah, that's so cool, dude. That's such a huge feat. That is not easy. I still flake last minute to things here and there.
Yeah.
It's hard. I feel you.
It's a test. And honestly, every time that I've asserted myself in that way, I've gotten such positive feedback.
Yes.
And it's still hard for me to believe that people love me regardless of whether or not I meet every single one of their needs and do every single thing that they want me to do.
Yeah, for sure. It's so hard.
Yeah. So there's this meme that's been going around on like TikTok or this video, and it's this giant like music festival, and there's this kid kind of like standing in the middle and like drinking his little drink, and he just looks very like concerned and stressed out. And I feel like that would be me 100% at that house party. So immediately I'm like, I can't fucking go to that. But it still took me a week to respond with that information, you know? So
yeah, that's how I get it. Dude, I did that shit. This is so dumb and different, but I'm gonna say it. I need to out my shadow.
Do it.
Last month, my daughter's mom and I went to dinner. It's one of our favorite things to do. And we went to a fancy ass dinner, and I parked my car in the same parking lot as she did. And we were both like, oh, we won't get a ticket. Like, we were just like, whatever. And so we left, we went and ate dinner. And then I got back, and we both had parking tickets. And I just fucking didn't pay it. It's not funny. It's really hard for me. You bitch.
I'm so sorry.
This is a life issue. And then I get another ticket, and it's increased from $27 to $86 with a $3 processing charge fee.
God damn it.
And I was like, Katie? That's like $60. I mean, the whole thing's out of my budget, first of all, because I wasn't planning on a fucking ticket. I don't set money aside for a ticket, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, anyways, that's what I do.
Ooh, here, I'll do. I don't pay my art tax.
Oh, dude.
I don't pay my Portland art tax. And it is not because I do not think that it is important for art to exist. And we have so many beautiful fucking murals in Portland. Like, I am all about it. My thing is, take it out of my paycheck with everything else. Don't send me something in the mail that I never fucking read and let just like pile up and then expect me to log on to something, create an account or write a check and send it in. So I just honestly every single year forget by the deadline. But then if you forget the next year, they will like get you with more and more and more and more. So at this point, like I probably owe so much money in art tax. Please do not come for me, Ted Wheeler.
They like start to garnish your paycheck.
Yes, but like just take it out of my paycheck because things like that, like little things like that, take me so much time to do. I procrastinate on that shit. So I get it. I also could be.
Same. Steve is like 100% in charge of our ballots.
Yeah, Danny's really good at that shit. He takes care of his shit.
Yeah, so does Steve. And I'm like, no, but I bear so much other mental weight in the household, so I'm not going to fucking stress about it. Anyways, we should move on.
Boundaries. Asserting. Yes. Asserting yourself. I love it. Cool. So, Katie, we definitely used each other in terms of like calling each other and having us be a resource when we were having some tough times. But what are some other tools and resources? I know we already kind of mentioned meditation. We mentioned Reframe, of course. But what can we kind of leave people with if they might not even have started their journey and be like, ooh, that sounds kind of fucking like an emotional roller coaster. I don't know if I want to do that, or I'm thinking about it, but how do I make sure that I don't relapse after my pink cloud phase?
Right. Yeah, that's all things that I want to share with people. I think that your arsenal is whatever you find is easiest to prioritize. So pick one thing. Try one thing every day in early sobriety when things are really great. And those things will usually follow over when things aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sustainable to do 7 different types of healing the first 2 months of sobriety. I think that picking one thing that is working for you in terms of a program or in terms of an accountability system, does mm-hmm. that make sense? Yeah. I just, you know, I went all in on like 7 different projects with no accountability priority. And so I would just recommend doing it the opposite way. Start with your Reframe app or your 12-step program or your outpatient program or, you know, whatever it is that you're using as your tool or your playbook. I also can recommend Tempest. I've also heard good things about Living, which used to be Arlie. There's a ton of different programs out there that you can follow that are free or like really cost effective. So I would pick one of those things when you first start and then would slowly add in new habits as time goes on to really build that base that will be sustainable. And the roller coaster is so much more fun to ride than it was when I was drinking. So I'm like, if anything I said today ever is like make someone think like, wow, I don't want to go through that. It's like, fuck, that's how I feel about having a hangover.
Yeah, 100%. It's not a roller coaster where you're leaning over the side and fucking puking the entire
and then hating yourself for puking.
It's great. And honestly, like I said, like the highs and lows are so small. It's like a little baby dinky roll. It's like a fucking lazy river, man.
And not for everyone, right? Like it's going to be different
for
everyone's.
Sure.
But at least it'll be easier to manage if you feel like, huh, you know, I'm feeling extra low. Like, I should probably contact my doctor, you know? I think it's just a way to, like, peel back that layer of numbing so that you can really just get to know yourself.
Well, and figure out what actually works. Because whether yes. you fucking love yes. to do it like I did or not, drinking doesn't work. It's not working. Mm-hmm. It's never worked. And that's mm-hmm. why your problems are exactly the same problems as they have been. So that's some fucking tough love, little babies. But
I know, that's so true. And I think now it's such a special time to be giving something like this a go, especially in the beginning of your journey, specifically right now. Like you said, there's so many resources. Like, sober Instagram is great. However, I also kind of have to monitor like replacement addiction with my phone. But that's just, you take that all one day at a time and you just stay aware and just stay kind to yourself. And, you know, you figure all of that out.
Yeah, 100%. I think we could do an entire episode on replacement addiction.
I know. So, that's a great idea.
Yeah, let us know if you all would be interested in that. But I would also say, just kind of circling back to when you feel like you're on one, take advantage of that in terms of using it to explore things that could be added to your toolkit. Even if you might be scared that you suck at meditation, or I was really worried about starting bouldering because I thought that I wasn't going to be good at it, or I wasn't going to like it. When you're feeling good, I feel like you're more apt to try new things. And so just make sure that you're like making the time and space for that by not, you know, Katie mentioned, overbooking yourself with a bunch of stuff and trying to do it all at the same time. But if you're thinking about joining a new gym class, or there's a craft night or an art thing, or just any sort of thing that you have thought of and been like, well, that might be kind of cool, I might be interested in that, take that time to do it in the first few months of sobriety when you're feeling bright and shiny, because you'll be able to go back to those things when things are different.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, when I was drinking, I didn't have hobbies.
Oh, I would always freak out when you know, there was the icebreaker question at work, or I had to fill out a bio and it was like, what are your hobbies? And I'm like, drinking fucking red wine all the time and watching trash TV, like, puking.
Yeah. For me, it was like, I like kind of was on, I was on a volleyball team. So I like, and I worked out, but like, I was drinking White Claws at volleyball, you know, as they say, drinking is not part of a personality. It's not a personality trait. Like, it's not a part of who you are.
Yeah. Exactly.
Even though we identify with it, and that is also, you know, conditioning. But I think that when it comes to the pink cloud in the beginning of sobriety, that sticky relapse time is the time that A, you slip up and you learn from it, and then you get back on the horse. I don't know. I hate that. Like, back on the horse. It's so fucking weird.
Back on the wagon.
Back on the wagon. Yeah. So you know, if you have a slip up, you start over. But if you can edge through that time and really lean in on those resources that you armed yourself with during the pink cloud, the transition is going to be so much better for you.
I love that. Sorry, Katie, not to cut you off, but you saying edge your way through that just reminds me of like edging in general.
It's actually interesting because I've heard that used as a sexual term.
Yes.
And then I also, they use it a lot in like spiritual practices and like healing spaces. So like, what's your edge? Like, what are you coming up to that's like pushing back at you, right? Like, what's challenging you in your life? So I like them either way. I'm into it.
Yeah. Edging your sobriety until you, you know, reach euphoria, reach enlightenment. I'm done.
I love you. So yeah, we have a crazy guest next week and he deserves a shout out.
Therapy Jeff, baby. We've quoted him. We've touted him as an amazing resource, and he's going to actually spend some time with us talking about his own sobriety journey as well as just what that means for being in the therapy space, especially during a global pandemic. So we're so excited to have him.
And if you haven't checked him out, head to TikTok or Instagram. It's Therapy Jeff. Essentially, he gives tips and advice about mental health, about relationships in your household, about how and what we're going through as a collective. And he's fucking funny. He's the shit. Incredibly, like, resources are endless with him. And I think that his content just makes my day better. So go check him out on TikTok or Instagram at Therapy Jeff.
Awesome. Katie, do we have any shout outs that we want to wrap up the episode with?
Yes. We got the sweetest review from Sky. Yeah, he wrote in here, if I'm feeling low or just need to get out of my head, these conversations easily pick me up and help me to feel seen. And that is fucking exactly why we do this. It also helps Kaylee and I feel seen with each other, and it helps us overcome huge fears that we have talking about our stories. So yeah, thank you. If you like today's episode, don't forget to leave a review or share it on your Instagram story.
Good night.